From WDET in Detroit, this is special election coverage for the Michigan Public Radio Network. I'm Stephen Henderson. On November 6th, Michiganders will select a new governor. For the first time in 8 years, this is an open seat. The incumbent, Rick Snyder, is term limited, and both Democrats and Republicans think they have the candidate to replace him. There are also huge issues in this race. The Flint water crisis, the road conditions, education, Line 5. All of those issues are the things that will inspire people to go into the booth and pull the lever for either Democrats or Republicans. In 2016, Michigan was one of the key states that helped deliver the White House to President Donald Trump. In 2018, the question is whether the voters who helped do that will stay with the Republican Party and vote for the Republican candidate for governor, or will swing back toward the Democratic candidate, Gretchen Whitmer. This hour, you're going to hear from both major party candidates for governor. First up is Democrat Gretchen Whitmer. Gretchen, you have picked up endorsements of some prominent current and former Republicans in the state, former state Senator and Congressman Joe Schwartz and Richard McClellan, who has worked for both Rick Snyder and John Engler. They are both supporting you rather than support the Republican nominee for governor. But in Lansing, you're going to need support from current Republicans in our legislature to get things done. So I want to ask you about the working relationships you have with current Republicans in Lansing. And by current Republicans, I guess I mean people who are likely to be around after the November elections, people who will be part of the legislature in January. Can you talk about what those relationships look like?
Sure. I think that's a great question, Stephen. I mean, we know that you can get elected on the fringe, but you can't govern from there. And that's why I'm always very mindful of the fact that it's going to be incumbent on me to build relationships across the aisle, build relationships with people who are not traditionally find themselves in the Democratic Party. And that's why I've really worked hard, whether it's business leaders for Whitmer or it's the Republicans and independents group that came together. I'm proud of that because I am a consensus builder, and I had a lot of great success working with Rick Snyder on some important issues like Medicaid expansion or the lighting project in Detroit. And I think we've got a lot of work yet to do. So as I look at what the legislature, what the makeup could be, we obviously will not know until after the election. But Senator Mike Shirkey is someone that I worked with on Medicaid expansion. He is running to be the leader of the Republican caucus in the Senate, and he's someone that I've known and that I think I can find a good working relationship with. But one of the interesting things is, you know, I served with three different governors during my time in the legislature, and you can't underestimate the power of a quadrant meeting, and that's a governor convening the leaders of the four caucuses and having a regular conversation, and that's not really been done with regularity since John Engler was governor, and that's something I'm eager to create and see through and do. It doesn't mean we'll agree on everything, but you can find common ground if you're talking to one another, and that's something I think is really important.
Let's talk about tax structure here in Michigan. Bill Schuette is making a lot of the changes to taxes that were made when Rick Snyder was elected 8 years ago here in Michigan, and promising more in terms of tax cuts, things that he would like to get rid of in terms of the way that the state takes money out of our pockets for services. You want to push in the opposite direction. Talk about why you think that's a good idea, given the growth, the economic growth that we've seen over the last 8 years, and talk about what you would do with the money that would be raised from changing the tax structure.
So one of the things that I know is whether I'm talking to business people or heads of household, whether I'm talking to Upers or those of us who live in the Lower Peninsula, West Side or Southeast Michigan, people want us to solve problems. And some of the most glaring issues we have to confront as a state is the fact that our education system is now considered in the bottom 10 in our country, that our roads and infrastructure, it's making it downright dangerous, as well as a competitive disadvantage for us as a state when we try to tell the world we're the edge in mobility and advanced manufacturing, but you get off the airport at Detroit Metropolitan and get on the highway and you see that the roads are crumbling and we're all paying to fix our cars instead of actually attacking the problem, which is rebuilding our road infrastructure in Michigan. And so I think it's critical that we make these investments that we all benefit from. Our business climate benefits, as well as our household incomes, will rise when we've got a better education system and infrastructure that will support our commerce, as well as keep our families safe on the road. And so I think this is a fundamental difference. We're all paying for bad roads. We're paying to fix our cars. The average metropolitan Detroiter pays over $800 a year, whether it's replacing rims or windshields. And none of those dollars goes into actually fixing the problem. It's getting more and more expensive every day we don't do it right. And so when my opponent says he's going to cut taxes, he has no plan for how he will balance the budget, much less fix these fundamental problems. He says the right things. He says he wants to fix the roads, but when he offers proposals that'll make it even more difficult to do that, it's just not honest, it's not real, and I think we deserve better.
So road funding, that you've made a lot of that issue, and for good reason. I mean, everybody is, I think, sick of rattling around in their cars and bumping to work and to school and things like that. I want to get your very specific sort of explanation of how you would do that, what you would do to raise the money to fix the roads, and how you would pay for it.
So let's talk about that. So the average motorist is spending hundreds a year to fix our cars. We are paying a road tax that doesn't actually fix the roads. And that's why, you know, when Governor Snyder tried to push this through, I worked with him and I cast some tough votes when I was in the legislature. I was the Senate Democratic leader. I worked across the aisle with my Republican counterpart and with the governor. We cast votes on user fees to actually fix the problem. And the governor was unable to get the Republican-controlled House of Representatives to even put that vote before the legislature, and it failed. And they cobbled together that proposal that went down miserably at the polls. And so here we are. We still don't have a real fix. My plan is to create a rebuild Michigan Infrastructure Bank so taxpayers know every dollar is actually going into fixing our infrastructure. I will write in the first budget $2 billion, which leverages another $1 billion from the federal government, which means we can get to work rebuilding roads. And I will make use of a lot of those votes that I cast during my time in the legislature. But I acknowledge this legislature could look very different. The environment could look very different. And so what the individual pieces will be, I think, will to some extent depend on kind of what the legislature's appetite is. If I can't get them to take those tough votes, I'm confident that I can, because I'm going to build a coalition with business, with individuals, with leaders from both sides of the aisle to get it done. But if the legislature is too weak to do it, then we'll go straight to the people and pass a bond if we have to, because not fixing the problem is not an option. We're going to pay dearly in the safety of our people or in our inability to draw investment into Michigan, and that's why we've got to get it done. But I want to add one more layer of concern here. You know, when you see those bridges that have temporary supports, some of them have over 400 temporary supports. Those are bridges that are school buses are crossing with students in them. When you talk to a woman like I did in Ann Arbor not long ago, she had an aneurysm, and the ambulance came, picked her up, and of course, time is of the essence, but they took a longer route to the hospital because they didn't want to go over a pothole-ridden road because it would endanger her more. This is the kind of daily risk we are taking by not tackling this problem, and business and individuals alike need a governor and a state government that fixes it.
Your questions for Democratic nominee for Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Let's start with Ed in Shelby Township.
Good morning. I have two financial questions.
Go ahead.
Will you maintain the Michigan Rainy Day Fund at its current level, and will you continue to pay down Michigan's long-term debt?
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, Gretchen Whitmer. Those are two priorities from the Snyder administration, which rebuilt up the Rainy Day Fund after years of it being pretty low. And he also concentrated a lot of financial resources on making sure long-term debt for school districts and for the state were being paid down. What would your approach look like?
Well, I think that, you know, both of those are important goals, and I share those goals. I recognize that we've got some glaring issues that we've got to confront as a state. The people of Flint still, you know, a lot of people in Flint still cannot drink the water coming out of their tap. I was there a couple months ago, and I spoke with a mom who pulled up her sleeve and showed me the raging rash on her arm, and she had just taken a shower that morning. She'd only showers a couple times a week because she breaks out that way every time. She's got four kids. Same thing happens to them. I mean, we've got some crises that are happening in our state, and I'm concerned about that. The quality of our drinking water, whether it is Flint or this PFAS issue that is chemical that is leaching into drinking water. It's in 15 out of 83 counties. It's probably, we're just finding how big it is. And I think these are things that I'm really very worried about. And so while I am philosophically absolutely supportive of having a rainy day fund, it's important for us as a state. I recognize that clean drinking water is a fundamental human right, and a lot of communities don't have it right now here in Michigan. And that's why I think as a transition happens, when you pull back the curtain on state government and find out what you're really walking into, it's important to acknowledge that there could be things we learn that are going to necessitate swift action and perhaps an emergency action. And that's what that rainy day fund is for.
Right.
That being said, I'd like to continue to have it there and build it up. It's good for our credit rating and our ability to borrow, but a credit rating is no good. You know, it's not nearly as important as clean drinking water is for people in their homes.
That's an important balancing exercise. For whoever's governor to go through, and different governors have approached it different ways. I guess to sort of boil it down to the sort of bottom line, what do you think is a minimum level to maintain in that rainy day fund? It has gotten to the point where it was almost gone in our recent past. What's your bottom number, I guess, for that rainy day fund?
Well, I think we have to talk with our finance people and balance our immediate needs. I think that's what determines what that minimum number is. I mean, we have seen it grow, and I did support some of the deposits into it. You know, about $500 million, I think, was when we saw it really had made a difference in our credit rating. But mm-hmm. I think that this is something that there's not a finite number that means we're safe and that it won't impact our credit rating and that it gives us enough to address the glaring day-to-day problems that we're facing as a state. So I think that it's important that we have a thoughtful plan. We're talking with our lenders, and we are really very cautious when it comes to taking any of those dollars out.
Okay. A listener on Instagram wants to know if you support Medicaid for all.
So one of the things that I'm really proud of the work that I was able to do in the legislature, you know, I was a Senate Democratic leader, and I worked across the aisle with Rick Snyder to deliver on Medicaid expansion. I always give him credit for that. It was not an easy thing for a Republican governor to do with the legislature that he had, but Rick Snyder looked at what it would mean for Michigan and embraced it. And when he did that, I came right, you know, to his side and crossed the aisle and worked very closely to make sure we got it done. And that's a good thing. We still have 600,000 people in our state that don't have health care. And we need to work to make affordable, quality health care available for everyone. Medicare for all, you know, has been bandied about in the federal level. And as the feds proceed, if they are able to get that done, that's something that I really would be pleased to see, because that means we could get everyone covered. And that's the goal.
We also have a question from WKAR in East Lansing. What is the biggest issue that you see facing education right now, and what would you do to fix it?
Well, that's the hardest and most important question for a lot of us parents. You know, I've got kids in the public schools, and, you know, I look around at, I speak to their teachers, to people who are parapros in our schools, people that dedicate themselves to education. We have got a number of crises on the education front. And obviously, when our literacy rates put us in the bottom 10 in this country, we all pay a price for that. So I think it's really important that we've got put a real priority on lifelong education in Michigan again, from cradle to career, that we invest in universal early childhood education so that every kindergartner comes in ready to learn, that we triple the number of literacy coaches, because we know that if you're not literate by the end of third grade, that's one of the fundamental points where people determine whether or not they're going to need to build more prisons is based on a literacy rate at the end of third grade. Determine your lifelong health and your lifelong wealth, whether or not you're literate. And that's why I think we've got to do less and obsess about doing it well. I mean, supporting people who go into education. We've got too few people that are pursuing careers in the profession of education because they've been demoralized and demeaned and attacked. And their voices haven't been a part of decision-making when it comes to policies coming out of the Capitol. And that's one of the things that I think is going to be crucial to us turning this around as well, is treating educators with respect and making sure that their voices are a part of the debate and decision-making that happens around the education of our kids, because they are the experts.
We've got a caller who wants to talk about Garland Gilchrist, who's your lieutenant governor, running mate, and the stories that we've seen about this house that he bought here in Detroit, this apartment building, small apartment building, out of the land bank, and has not been able to take care of that the way that the land bank really requires owners to take care of that property. I wonder what you make of that issue with Garland Gilchrist, and what you make of, I guess, the greater context here, which is the question of how we revitalize cities like Detroit and, of course, how we hold people responsible for their properties.
Sure. Well, I appreciate the question. You know, one of the things that anyone who's met Garland Gilchrist knows, he loves Detroit. He moved back to Detroit and wanted to raise his kids in the city. He and his wife who works for DPS, you know, really made a commitment to becoming a part of the community. And when he was on the mayor's team, he made, you know, took an opportunity to buy a piece of property, and his hope was to invest and turn it around, like so many people that are doing that in the city of Detroit. It's a great thing. He, of course, like a lot of people, hit some financial road bumps and things got a little off track. He is working very hard to make it right, and I'm confident that he's going to. But I think that this is one of those issues that is not foreign to a lot of us, right? You're trying to do the right thing, and road bumps happen. And the question of character is, do you take ownership over it and try to make it right? And that's exactly what Garland's doing, and I'm glad for that. I think, you know, we've seen so many cynical politicians try to turn stories like this into something, you know, something ugly, and I think it's unfortunate. My opponent is really been relentless about this, but I think it's also to detract from all the misuse that he's made of his office over the years. As in his own primary, Brian Kelly pointed out that he was using state employees to execute documents to sell a $7 million property of his for him and his sisters.
I actually don't really want to talk about Bill Schuette. We're going to have him on next. Let's let him talk about him. Let's let you talk about you. I guess the question about Garland, though, is in part, is he getting preferential treatment? Did he get some preferential treatment in the sense that the land bank did not come in and repossess that property from him? I think that's the concern that that lurks in the back of this issue.
I think some of the safety valves failed, and I can't, you know, opine as to what it was that happened, but it does appear that, you know, some of the deadlines should have been enforced and met, and I don't know how or where that fell through the cracks, but I can tell you that with the situation that is present now, he is working extremely hard to make it right, and I think that's what character looks like.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Ben in Auburn Hills. Ben.
Hey, good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
Hey, Ms. Whitmer. Nice to have you on the show. I just have a few questions. I'm in the shop up here in Auburn Hills, so it may be a little loud in the background.
Okay.
But first concern is car insurance. I'm from out of state, and I was I was floored when I realized how much you all pay in car insurance up here, and if you have any proposals to amend that or reform it in any way right now.
Okay, Ben, appreciate the call and the questions. Auto insurance, do you have a plan to reform auto insurance here in the state of Michigan?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I get across the state, I mean, I've talked to person after person after person who talks about how they've got to look at the insurance bill before they even look at a car note. We are so far out of whack with the rest of the nation, and the insurance industry has been writing the rules for a long time here in Michigan, and that's why I'm determined to work with all the stakeholders and sign something into law in the first 6 months of next year that actually brings rates down. There are some pieces that I think are really important of a solution, and one is we need to have real transparency around the catastrophic claims fund. Insurance companies should not be able to make rates based on non-driving factors like your credit rating or your marital status or your education level or zip code. I mean, these are used against communities, and this kind of leverage and power should not be vested in the insurance industry, and that's critical to bringing rates down. But also, I think we can have that conversation about enforcing and ensuring that we take fraud out of the system. I know Governor Snyder recently did something on that front. I don't know that there's additional resources or people dedicated to it, and that's something that I think is important to root out fraud and have some reasonable cost containments. But this system that we have was to make sure that people that are catastrophically injured have care. And I think that that's a goal that we need to be mindful of and stay committed to as well. So I think these are all pieces of a solution, but it's going to take a governor who knows how to convene people to get it done and to insist that it's not a temporary or illusory, benefit in the short term, because this is about really giving people relief and making Michigan competitive and ensuring that every one of us has access to affordable car insurance. It's not too much to ask, and we can get it done, and we will.
I know we only have a few minutes left with you. I want to squeeze this question in, though. It comes from Interlochen Public Radio near Traverse City. What should the state do about Line 5? If the Democratic ticket sweeps this fall, your Attorney General would be Dana Nessel. She says she would sue to halt this tunnel project to create a new Line 5 route. She wants to shut down the line altogether. Would you support her in that effort, or would you take a different approach?
I want to get the oil out of the Straits of Mackinac at the earliest possible moment, and that's why I'm very skeptical of this agreement that Governor Snyder announced to bind the next governor to something that could be a threat to our economy and our way of life and our drinking water for 7 to 10 years while a tunnel project is pursued is irresponsible, and it's not something that I support. As governor, I want to be able to go in there and take action in the safety and in the interests of the economy and of the people of the state. And I think it's wrong to try to bind the hands of the next governor. This is something that if a catastrophe happened, it would absolutely devastate our Great Lakes, which is one of the most unique, important features of the state of Michigan. It would hurt our agriculture, our tourism, our drinking water up and down throughout the state of Michigan. And it's something that we can't run, quickly and needs to have real transparency. And so I'm very skeptical of it. And I've talked to enough people on the Mackinac Bridge Authority to know they were ambushed by this. And I think that that's a
by the
really
tunnel project
dangerous.
Even?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's a really dangerous way to proceed on something that's this important, and that the people of our state are very clearly telling us that they don't want that threat going through the Straits of Mackinac.
So, yes, you would want to just turn off the pipe.
Well, I've never said I can turn it off on day one, because I know a governor doesn't have
right.
a spigot in the governor's office.
Right.
But, yes, I want to move expeditiously to get that oil out of the Great Lakes.
And suing to stop this tunnel project, if Dana Nessel wins and goes ahead with that, you would support her in that effort then?
I think it's always been very clear Enbridge isn't going to do it of their own volition. It's going to take action, and I think that's how it would have to happen.
Okay. Gretchen Whitmer, Democratic candidate for governor, I really appreciate you spending this time with me and our listeners.
You always ask great questions, Stephen. I appreciate the work you do.
Bill Schuette is the Republican candidate for governor this year. Bill Schuette, welcome.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be with you.
Right. Let's start here. You have been in politics for more than 30 years. And during that time, I can't think of anyone else in Michigan who was closer to the Bush family than you were. Yet George Bush says Donald Trump doesn't know what it means to be president. And Jeb Bush has called him the chaos president. Yet Donald Trump is somebody that you've really fully embraced on this campaign. Unequivocally, really. So is the Bush family wrong about this president, or is there some disconnect that I'm not picking up about your feelings about this president?
Well, you know, I think the real answer here is twofold. First, you know, I appreciate very much the administration, the president and vice president's help in my campaign. And I think people in the state appreciate the fact that they're moving the production of the Ram truck from Mexico to Michigan, to Macomb County, 2,500 jobs, $1 billion investment, and every Chrysler Automotive employee got a $2,000 tax cut bonus. Why? Because the administration in Washington and Republican members of Congress cut taxes. And when was the last time you ever heard of jobs coming from Mexico to Michigan? And I appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that the president is rebalancing trading relationships. This new United States, Mexico-Canadian free trade agreement is all about making sure we get a better deal for American and Michigan manufacturing workers that frankly got messed over and forgotten about during this global economy where the elites on each coast made a ton of money, but then manufacturing and factories were shut down. So we're changing that. That's important for Michigan. So I appreciate those policy initiatives. I appreciate also the president appointing rule of law justices to the United States Supreme Court. The Bush family, listen, I have great admiration for them. Years ago when George Herbert Walker Bush was running for president, it was Bill Schuette and George Bush, none of the Secret Service stuff. It was in my mother's Jeep because my Camaro really wasn't quite big enough for all the stuff that George Bush and I were doing running for president. So, listen, I have great admiration for the family. And this is, I'm Michigan-centric. I'm focused on Michigan.
So one of the things that the Bush family talks about, though, with regard to Donald Trump is these things he says, the way he describes immigrants to this country, the way he talks about African Americans, the way he talks about the poor. Can you even bring yourself, though, to criticize any of those things? I mean, that's been something that surprised me, I guess, about this
campaign.
Listen,
you know, I'm about Michigan, and I'm about growing our state. I'm about jobs and bigger paychecks, and that's what Michigan is all about. And people who know me, who really care, who want to take the time. And it's hard. I know it's a state of 9 million plus people. It's not easy. But the fact is, how I conduct myself in public office, how I've led as in the state as attorney general, how I'll lead the state as governor. I was raised by a single mom. My dad died when I was just a boy, 6 years old, and my mom kept our family intact, raised my two older sisters and me, and I was taught. This is who I am. I was taught to treat everybody with dignity, grace, and respect, and you treat people like a family. And that's what my two older sisters drilled into me. That's what my mom did. And that's who I am. And so,
But that's not who this president is.
Well, listen,
an obligation as a leader
I'm running for governor, and I'm telling you who I am, and I want to make sure we grow our state. That's what this is about.
Okay, let's talk about some of the issues in this campaign. Let's start with roads. You haven't given a lot of specifics on how you would pay for the massive undertaking of fixing our terrible roads. It's still kind of unclear if it would be possible to get the legislature to do more with the road funding we have. Can you tell me specifically what your plan is to make the roads better?
It's a good thing I'm here because I've been very specific for a long time now about my plan to how we rebuild Michigan's infrastructure. And the fact is, nobody experiences the roads in Michigan more than I and all across the state. There are some of these potholes I see so frequently, I kind of give them nicknames, you know. And here's the point. We need to make sure our roads are reflective of the quality of cars that we build in Michigan. We need to have the same quality of roads. And the goal here must be for Michigan to be the leader in terms of the economy. we need to make sure that we have first world roads. We can't have third world roads. And so here's what we need to do specifically, Stephen. Number one, we need to have a complete audit of MDOT and how they allocate highway funding and Public Act 51. Because we need to make sure we're getting efficient and stretching our resources. How many miles are we per gallon of pavement are we getting from our gas taxes? Secondly, we need to have guarantees and warranties on roads and bridges and infrastructure. Why is that important? Well, it's like any other product you buy or purchase has some form of warranty. I think citizens deserve that. I'll work with the contractors and the designers to make sure that we have warranties and guarantees in terms of how long our roads will last. Thirdly, we need to be more on the receiving end of federal highway dollars. And I'll walk right through the front door of the White House because of my relationships with the administration. I'll call the Secretary of Transportation, Elaine Chao, is a friend of mine, and I understand Congress as a former member. And so these relationships are important. Gretchen Whitmer doesn't have those relationships at all, and that's I'm going to be an advocate for Michigan. And the final thing is, I think you know that we're in the middle of a $1.2 billion investment in roads all the way through 2020. And I want to add to that by establishing roads as a priority in the Schuette administration. And every other aspect of government will have to chip in. Why? Because we're going to rebuild our roads in Michigan. Now, my opponent simply wants to raise taxes. So everybody out there, watch out. Look out, look out. Senator Whitmer wants to raise your taxes, gouge your wallet, so, and I'm going to protect your wallet. Yeah. And we can, with a $58 billion budget, you can invest more in roads, period.
So most of the estimates say we need at least $1 billion more dollars every year to not improve the roads, just to maintain the roads that we have better than we do. The things that you just talked about, will they yield that $1 billion more every year?
You know what? These different studies, and again,
they all reach the same conclusion.
But the point is, when I'm governor, we'll have a fresh start. I'll review that thoroughly and completely with my team of strong and exceptional, skilled women and men who will be part of the Schuette administration, and we'll make sure we make the investment in it. But here's the point: Senator Whitmer wants to raise gas taxes by 20 to 40 cents a gallon. That would send us in an economic spiral. It would pave the way to the loss. Decade when we had people leaving the state in droves, we'd have again 15% unemployment and lose jobs. That would just crush job creation in Michigan. So, you know, the fear of Gretchen Whitmer as governor is going to cause me to win.
So I'm going to say this one time. We've got you here to talk about your plans. We had Gretchen here. Let's talk about Bill Schuette and what he will do and not get into what you think of her plans.
Fair enough, but I'm glad I got that in.
Okay, yeah, all right. I should have stopped you.
That's all right. You're being fair.
Let's talk about health care. You joined multiple lawsuits that would have crippled the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid expansion.
No, that's not true.
Well, the suits that you joined as Attorney General would have held the act back from being able to be enacted.
And the fact is Obamacare didn't work, and everybody knows
but
that.
But what I'm saying is that you joined suits that would have stopped it from working.
Except every time, part and parcel of that was every op-ed, every comment that I made, I always said from day one, as did other Republicans across the country who knew that Obamacare didn't work because it raised taxes, premiums went up, the exchanges didn't work, and this is a Democrat
scare. But this is before.
No, but this is a Democrat scare tactic that's going on because they're trying to scare people by not telling the truth. And the fact is, I've always been for maintaining pre-existing conditions. I've always been for raising, making sure you can keep your child on your health care plan until 26 and have a portability of insurance going across state lines. And that's always been part of this issue. And because, listen, it's like the small business owner, Tara, I know, who had such difficulty with Obama care that she finally left the exchange because she couldn't choose her doctor. Then she had to pay a fine. Her own government fined her and punished her because she didn't want to be forced to engage in the exchange.
She needed to have insurance.
Yeah, but then she did it on her own. And the fact is, but she was fined for doing it. And that's what this was all about. And now we've the administration and the Republicans in Congress have changed portions of Obamacare. I always want to make sure that we cover and maintain pre-existing conditions. Like this woman named Kaylee Pung, who had a diving accident and is paralyzed. And I fought with Blue Cross Blue Shield to make sure that Kaylee Pung got her insurance coverage and she had a pre-existing condition. What is that? She's paralyzed. And to have someone say that I wouldn't maintain pre-existing conditions is just not true. The fact is I always have been.
But the idea of protecting people from insurance companies dumping them when they have pre-existing conditions comes out of Obamacare. No, there was no other mechanism to do that before.
And every time I advocated repealing and replacing Obamacare, it would be with coverage.
Coverage that maintained
pre-existing conditions. So it's frankly a lie. It's not true.
Okay.
And people aren't going to buy that.
Let's talk about Medicaid. Michigan is one of the states that has one of the most successful expansions of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act.
And it's in Healthy Michigan is
what's
the law, and it's here to stay.
And you would not seek alterations in it.
I want to improve it. And what I want to do is make sure we have a Medicaid work requirement for able-bodied.
Well, how's that improving Medicaid?
And for able-bodied adults, I want to encourage them and help them get a job. They'd be on an employer's health care plan because that would provide more money, Stephen, for those who are chronically ill, need assistance, need health care, and everyone needs to have affordable and accessible health care. And the point is that if you can get someone who's able-bodied on an employer's health plan, I'm going to celebrate that, and then there'll be more money for those who are chronically ill because the federal dollars and the state dollars are not infinite. This provides more resources for those who need help, and that's the point here. That is the point.
My guest is Bill Schuette. He is the current attorney general here in Michigan. He is running to be governor. He is the Republican candidate for governor.
And we're within the margin of error.
The new poll says you're pretty close, right?
Yeah, it's about 5 points till victory. I'm going to win this, but not until November 6th. I don't care whether you're...
Well, you can't win until November 6th. That's
here's
right.
How, in Michigan, to win a statewide race, whether your name is Ronald Reagan or John Engler or Donald Trump, you win on Election Day, and every Republican candidate starts a little bit behind. I'm the comeback kid. I'm the comeback kid.
Borrowing a line from Bill Clinton.
Well, you know what? It's reflective of what the truth is, and the fact is everybody knows this race is tightened, and this will be a 51-49 race.
I do think I'd love to hear you say more about how your leadership distinguishes itself from something like the Trump administration, from the rhetoric that we hear day after day from this president that is not just divisive, but often bigoted.
Well, you know, I have a high regard for the Bush family. You asked about the Bush family. And I also said I appreciate the fact of Donald Trump's policies on taxes means we're going to have more jobs at in Macomb County. We're bringing the truck production from Mexico to Michigan. I appreciate that. I appreciate he's rebalancing trading relationships that helps manufacturing workers. And I appreciate the fact he's appointed rule of law justices. And in terms of my leadership and style, I think in my years in public service, my calling, I've established myself as a person who's thoughtful, as a person who understands issues. You may not always agree with me, but I'm always going to tell you the truth. And that's my leadership style. And, you know, I'm the guy who took on Larry Nassar and prosecuted him and made sure that every survivor's voice was heard. I took on the Flint water investigation because families in Flint deserve justice. And I think my actions and my record reflect a thoughtfulness, and that's who I am. And that's who I'll be as you're going.
So we have a question from WCMU in Mount Pleasant. You've been criticized for being slow to get involved with PFAS contamination in our drinking water at sites around the state. You haven't pushed companies like 3M to be compelled to release information on contamination and cleanup. What should the state's role be in this PFAS investigation, and would your position or your approach be different if you became governor?
Well, the point is, right now, I am one of those who wants to make sure that we clean up the drinking water so there's safe drinking water for people where they live in Parchment, which is near Kalamazoo, or north of Grand Rapids in Rockford, or Alpena in northeastern Michigan because of this PFAS issue. And my Department of Attorney General is the lawyer for the policy institution, the Department of Environmental Quality. We're waiting for them to complete their work and review and their recommendations. And when they're done, then we'll make sure we aggressively file any legal suit that needs to occur. Because the point is, in Michigan, this issue of clean and safe and water is important. That's why I took the lead on the Flint investigation to make sure that there's justice for families of Flint. So, again, this is about making sure that there is a voice for those people, voice of whether it's a victim of Flint or whether it's those who can't drink water because it's you know, poor quality. I'm going to help people on that. And when I'm governor, I will be a leader on that, working with the federal government to make sure that we have safe drinking water wherever you live in Michigan, period.
Let's go to Christopher in Detroit.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Christopher. Hi, Christopher. Thanks for calling.
I'm a Detroiter. I pay $917 a month for insurance.
Oh, my goodness.
For car insurance. No other insurance, one car. I have no bad priors. I'm 29 years old. What are you going to do to help us?
Thank you for the call, Christopher. Bill Schutte.
Yeah, Christopher, you know, your question's right on point. It's very similar to a guy who came up to me, Christopher. He was a Detroiter, too. I was in southeastern Michigan. I was in Macomb County for a parade. This guy came up to me twice in the parade and told me, you got to fix auto insurance rates, Bill, and told me the story about his daughter not moving to Michigan because of the high cost of auto insurance. And you're getting raked over the coals at $917 per month. And I mean, that's a huge bite out of your wallet. And what it does is act as a disincentive for people moving to Michigan. We need to it's a barrier to entry. And I, as your governor, are going to make sure that we lower auto insurance rates and do this. We're going to crack down on insurance fraud, stop the frivolous lawsuits, and thirdly, give people options, Christopher, in terms of what their insurance coverage should be. I'm going to work with Mike Duggan. I'm Detroit's best hope for auto insurance.
So you support the idea of getting rid of no fault?
Let me just finish here, Christopher, because there's going to be Republicans in charge of the state house, Republicans in charge of the state senate, and I'll be the governor. And I'm the only hope for Mike Duggan to say, okay, Mike, we need three Democrat votes in the senate, need about six Democrat votes in the house, and we'll get real auto insurance reform. And I'm not going to start with any preconceived notion of who's going to win and who's going to lose. Everybody has to chip in, whether you're the hospitals, whether you're insurance companies, Chamber of Commerce. But the fact is, Michigan citizens pay $1,000 more on average than any other state in the nation. That will change when Bill Schutte's governor.
So the end of no fault, you support that?
No, I'm saying this, is that we've got to bring rates down. And you're going to have a table, and around that table will be all the interested parties. And I'll look them in the eye. I'll be an engaged governor on the floor. And that's a skill set I have. This is all about relationships. And the fact is, I will make sure that Michigan citizens win. And that means all these other entities and interested parties are going to have to give a little bit, because that's what will happen when I'm governor of the state of Michigan.
Education. This question comes from WKAR in East Lansing. What's the biggest issue facing education right now, and what would you do to fix it?
I think the biggest issue facing education is our third grade reading scores. Now, I went to public schools. So did my wife, and our children went to Carpenter Street Elementary, Jefferson Middle School, and Midland Dow in our hometown. They had a great education, but today, with our third grade reading scores, are among the lowest in the nation. That's outrageous. And that is a key challenge for Michigan, that we have to make sure that children read. And I think everyone's born with curiosity, Stephen. I think every child has a sense of wonder, right? But if you can't read, it's a dead-end street. And when our third grade reading scores show that only 35% of our third graders are proficient in reading, that's outrageous. We've got to grade our schools A through F, a report card, so parents know which schools are doing well, which aren't, provide grants for those schools that are showing improvement, and I will name a literacy director as a cabinet member because of the significance of reading. When I'm governor, Michigan's children will read, and I want to be judged, Stephen, on our proficiency rates. If they're going down, you can fire me when I run for re-election, but I'm going to make sure we have summer reading camps, a Michigan Reading Foundation where we can have summer reading coaches. We need to make sure that Michigan's children will read, and I don't care whether you're a high school graduate is going into the workforce or to college, you've got to read by third grade, or the lens through which you see Michigan or America is cloudy, and it's grim and it's gloomy. You know, this is supposed to be a shining city on a hill. If you can't spell opportunity or read the directions to get there, your future is pretty bleak. Yeah. We can't have that.
Let's go to Lucy and Troy.
Lucy.
Last question, Lucy.
Hi. I was wondering, so Amazon cited one of their reasons for not coming to Detroit that we didn't have a skilled workforce, that there wasn't enough talent here. So I was curious what your specific plan was to make sure that people who are currently unemployed or become unemployed have skills necessary to get back into the workforce and also train the future workforce so that businesses actually want to come here and do business here?
That's a question, Lucy. It's a great question. It's also a question that Megan in Warren, who's holding, has. And so you can answer both of them, this question of training people to be ready for the jobs that we want to attract here and then attracting those jobs.
And listen, Lucy and Megan, for this question about apprenticeships and skilled trades and all of that. You know, the HQ2 decision, we have to learn from that, and the Foxconn decision that didn't come to Michigan. And part of that is talent. And that's another word for population. We've got to grow our population because our demographic is aging, and we need to make sure we have a diverse workforce and a younger workforce. And that's why I want to drive taxes down. That's why I have more flexible regulations and rules, because if you look across America, the states that are growing have lower taxes, fewer rules and regulations, and more people. And that means you have more talent and a deeper pool of a workforce. And we need to do this. We need to have greater emphasis on skilled trades and apprenticeships. Here in Detroit, with Randolph High School and Henry Ford College, DTE is partnering and mentoring people going into high school, giving them a trade and a skill, and then a job in the workforce. And we need to mirror that in other places across Michigan. We need to have greater flexibility, number two, with seat time, so that if a child is a student is working in a job, that would count as credits towards his or her high school degree. I was in Madison Heights not long ago with a principal and superintendent who showed me his career lab, where these young students who have, you know, smart brains, agile with their hands, were displaying their talent and skill. And so we need to make sure that there are greater options and renewed emphasis on skilled trades. And the other issue is having greater flexibility on who the teachers are. If there's someone in the private sector who has a skill, let that person teach at a school enhance someone's skills as apprenticeships. These are important jobs, valued jobs. They need to be done, Megan and Lucy. They need to be designed regionally and locally, not by Lansing, because each part of the state has a different skill set. And I want to have a job portal so that young students can see what jobs are available out there for different skills, because they pay well, and then you don't get saddled with all this debt when you go to college if you really want to go right into the workforce.
I know you have to go, but yeah. Before you do, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Line 5. It's such a big issue. Dana Nessel, who is running for Attorney General, says that if she wins, she would try to intervene in this plan to create a new pipeline underneath the bedrock of the lakes there. How would you deal with that if there were a conflict between what the Attorney General wanted to do, for instance, and what the governor wanted to do? How would that get resolved?
Well, you know, you always have to work with people, and I have a history of working in a bipartisan fashion. That's how we got human trafficking legislation, where now young women are forced to have sex or treated as victims, not criminals. And I worked in a bipartisan fashion, Stephen, to make sure that we had money so we could provide justice for serial victims who've been victims of rape, and so that we would prosecute the serial rapist. And so I work in a bipartisan fashion, and that's just what I'll do when I'm governor. Now, Tom Leonard's going to be the next Attorney General of Michigan.
Maybe not.
And with respect to Line 5, listen, I'm the one who over 2 years ago talked about the fact that we need to have that Line 5 will need to be deactivated, and that we need to have a different alternative. The tunnel provides visual inspection. It'll be a utility corridor deep below the waters of the Great Lakes, because we have to we can't have any risk of leak, and we need to make sure we provide propane for citizens in northern Michigan who are heavily dependent upon that, and make sure our energy producers get their product to market. So the tunnel is important, but the fact is Line 5 is going to be deactivated, and as governor, I'll make sure that occurs.
Okay, Bill Schuette, current Attorney General, Republican candidate for governor here in Michigan. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be with you, and thanks for letting me be on.
From WDET in Detroit, this has been special election coverage for the Michigan Public Radio Network. I'm Stephen Henderson with WDET in Detroit. Thanks for listening.